For me, it was like, I like being in the trap. The idea of coming into the meetings and like finding the guy that had the best program made me feel very unwell. Finding the guy that was covered in tattoos and looked like he was ready to fight somebody, I was like, oh, I'm gravitating towards you. And like, it's because it's just like, where am I going to find my comfort? Even if I really want to be sober, if I'm uncomfortable, I'm not used to being in uncomfortable situations, it's really tricky.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery, a show about recovery, spirituality, and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Real people, real stories, real life. This is the Most High Show. Yay.
Yay.
All right, guys. Joining us tonight for a special edition of the show, Recovery Hot Takes, we have Connor. He's coming up on 15 years of continuous recovery, and so he's here to answer some questions about recovery that may or may not be a little controversial.
A little spicy.
Not spicy, just controversial.
That's what I like to hear. I don't work in treatment. Let's go. We're going to be honest tonight.
You're like, I have nothing to lose.
Not a job, not a nothing. Nothing to lose.
Well, are you nervous about...
No. I say outlandish things all the time. This is just recorded, so that makes it more interesting for how this might be used against me in a court of law at some point. Time will tell.
I don't know. It makes it good for views, so thank you. All right. So, no beating around the bush. Let's just jump in to our first question here. Is relapse a part of recovery, or is it part of the cycle of addiction?
No, I mean, well,
that was not a yes or no question.
Oh, no, I mean, just to start off, like, the relapse has nothing to do with recovery. Hitting a bottom does.
I'm sorry.
You're good.
I'm sick. I'm sorry.
I'm just mentally sick. So you're good. You're in good company.
It's both.
Fine. But yeah, no. So, I mean, when I look at relapse, it's one of those things like you see people relapse and they die, you see people relapse and they come back, you see people relapse and they never come back. I don't view it any differently than I do just getting high in general. It's a matter of like, if I hit a bottom, physical or emotional, that I'm willing to do something to change. If you have either that physical bottom to where it's like, hey, I need to get sober, and like hopefully it becomes a point to where you're like willing to do something, that might keep you sober. And the same thing with an emotional bottom. Like my experience was, I didn't have the physical bottom when I came in or the emotional bottom yet. I got put in a corner of like, hey, I said some wacky shit and was like, you got to go to rehab. And then I was stuck there, and like some things stick up happening to where about 6 months into that, I am not high, because I'm sober is not a word I like to use, but like I'm not high, I'm not drinking, and I'm absolutely miserable. And the only thing I can see is there's about 4 or 5 people that came in the same time that I did. And like they did the work. They went and like did the steps. They were working with others. They were like doing all the things that we're told to do when we come in. And they are like happy, well-adjusted, doing well, at least from what I can see on the outside. And like my insides are like, I feel like I'm dying all the day. I'm constantly thinking about getting high. Like what's wrong? And it really came down to like, I'm not doing the stuff. I'm just not getting high right now. Once I hit that emotional bottom about 6 months in was when it was like, I'm willing to do something different. And like, that's when my life started changing for the better based off of recovery. And like, my experience was like, I've never relapsed. That's not that I'm better than or any other things like that. It's just like when things would go to shit, I learned this program of action to like get through things. And where that even would fall short for me, like some random act of God would happen in my experience that like would change the situation where it's like, I would go get high over this, or I was planning on getting high over it, to I would end up in a meeting. I lived behind Mazzy's in Roswell for years. I remember one night specifically, I was like, I am done. I am out. I'm ready to go back out. And I ended up at 8111 and I was pissed. I was like, this was such an easy drive. And somehow I deviated like 8 miles, and like, I can't, it wasn't something I wanted. It wasn't something that I thought about. It was just something greater than me brought me there. But yeah, no, I'd...
You mentioned you don't like to use the word sober. You just say, I'm not getting high, I'm not getting drunk.
No. So sober, I use all the time. At that point, I wouldn't use it.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's like, for me, like the only thing I was doing was just not getting high. Mm. Like I was the guy where it's like, I'd be at a meeting and I'd be on my phone, or I'd be mad at anyone that brought up the idea of God at all, because like that just was a hot button issue for a while. Mm-hmm. And I didn't work the steps. I wasn't rigorously honest about anything. Like I would sit in a treatment group and basically bullshit about other people in my life, so I didn't have to talk about myself. Mm-hmm. So for me, I look at that as like, I wasn't sober. I mean, like physically sober, yes. As far as like living a sober life, no. I was just very dry.
Yeah, because that like begs the question of like the difference between dry versus abstinent versus sober. So how would you like delineate the difference between sober versus just not getting fucked up?
Everybody's different. It's one of those things, like I've seen what worked for me and how my life has gone. To say what that might be for somebody else could be a wildly different experience doing very similar things. For me, what I view is like dry or abstinent in my life is like, I'm strictly just like, I'm just not picking up. When I do that, I am maladjusted to life is really the easiest way to put it. I'm not happy. I'm not content. I'm struggling in basically all aspects of my life. I am stressed out about work. It's always somebody else's problem. Like there's always this thing that's wrong because I can't take accountability for anything in my life, because I'm not like working a program in all of my affairs. Now on the other side of it, when I've seen it in other people's lives, like I know people where they came in, they got sober, and they don't go to meetings, they don't work with sponsors, they don't do all these things, and they're just fine. Like they're living a good life, everything's okay. I've tried doing that, like not, I made a decision, but like realistically, it's like I got busy, I started doing things, and like it became less of a thing where I was like really looking forward to trying to participate. But for me, all these good aspects of my life started kind of dwindling. My mental health started getting worse. Like all these things that like I gained that I really appreciated from recovery just started like disappearing. And for other people, that's just not always a thing. So I don't see there's like a good answer for like, what is this versus this for this? Everybody's different. The same way it's like, I've seen people get sober in NA, like AA, I met a bunch of people that are Buddhist. I met a bunch of people that found religion. Like, it's just figuring out what's the thing that's going to work for you. For me, the thing that I've seen work for the most amount of people and worked for me was the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And with that isn't just I'm going to meetings. It's, hey, like I work these steps. I try to practice these principles in all my affairs and I help others. When I do that is when I feel, quote unquote, the most sober, because I'm feeling whole, happy, well-adjusted, joyous, mm-hmm. and free. And when I don't is when I feel the exact opposite of that.
Right. And I think, you know, that's important to notate that recovery is personal. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, someone's bottom is personal. Like we all have different bottoms for the most part. You know, we even have like, oh, like the high bottom and the low bottom and everything. But it's like,
no pun intended.
You still.
Well played.
So sorry.
She's medicated. No. She's sick. Physically. Go cough in the corner.
Go ahead. Low bottom, high bottom.
Yes. So we already like have acknowledged like, okay, so those are differences, but you know, some of us happen to find recovery in the same place, but it's also, there's, you know, I heard someone say once that there's as many paths to recovery as there are people walking it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important, because even if, you know, even if the three of us are in the same room talking about the same way we all recover, we're not doing it in the same way either. Like yeah. We're, you know, it's going through our lens. And I think, you know, it's actually like a beautiful thing that today there is 1,000 ways people can recover. And I think for me, like my little thing is when people are not accepting of like another person's path or what a recovery looks like to another person, or they're like, oh well, this is what worked for me, so this is what works. It's like, no, like that's what worked for you, end of the sentence. Awesome, glad you're doing better. Like, you know, because like once recovery gets put in a box, like, oh, this is what recovery looks like, point blank period, that's where it can become harmful. Mm-hmm. Right? And it can hurt people, and it can, you know, discourage people from trying to recover, trying to get sober, trying to figure out what, you know, living a healthier lifestyle might look like, you know, because there are multiple hot buttons that people run into. And some people can look past their hot buttons and some people can't. And either way, that's okay. But if you have that, you know, earnest willingness to try a different way of life, you know, instead of getting fucked up over everything.
Yeah, no. And I think, like, and I can't disagree with anything you're saying. The only thing that I try to remember is like the difference between like, am I co-signing bad behavior by just not disagreeing with anything or not having any pushback? Or am I, like you said, just being insistent on this is what I believe, therefore I will force that down your throat. I've never seen forcing it down somebody's throat working for anything.
Right.
It's one of those things of like, I can't make anybody get sober, nor do I want to try to. For me, it's just a matter of like, I need to do this to the best of my ability. And if you have what I want, this is what I did to get there.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that I learned from my sponsor and the people that I got sober with was like, do your life to the best of your ability. And like, people will be attracted to that or they'll be put away from it.
Mm-hmm.
I just try not to be it's funny. I say a lot of like really out of pocket shit regularly, especially like in meetings where there's like newcomers and people doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a push to grow. So like for some people, sometimes it's a push away. It's never meant to be the push away, but yeah. Like my only big thing is like, hey, it's a spiritual program. Find God whatever way that you try to find it. When people start bringing up specific religion or religious figures is where I typically like will have a conversation with them after the meeting being like, hey, this isn't the place to do that. If you want to talk about God, higher power in a general sense, that's great. But when you start using specific names, there's a good chance there's going to be a newcomer that's going to hear that and think that's what this is, because mm-hmm. they're just going to hear what's different, not the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the biggest hindrance to help somebody here.
Right.
And usually people are open-minded to that. Some people aren't, but like, usually if you're really rigid and a dick,
mm-hmm.
you stop showing up. And that's really all I've kind of seen. Luckily, like I've had a lot of great experiences, but I know other people have been into meetings where they're miserable, they're misery traps, they're treated like shit, they're acted yeah. like they're not a part of, this is my friend's club and I'm going to like ignore this person. I've been lucky that that's not my experience, but like I try to make sure that when I'm going to a meeting and I'm doing something, like there's almost a guarantee that like there's going to be somebody that it's their first meeting, it's their first month, they don't know anybody, they're uncomfortable. Find the guy smoking a cigarette or standing by himself outside.
Yeah.
Ask him how their day's going. Like that was one of the most important things to me when I came in, because it was like I felt isolated and alone. The people that I knew weren't there because like they're still like out there using, or they're definitely not in a meeting.
Yeah.
And that feeling of aloneness is the biggest thing for it's like I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
The moment you feel like, hey, somebody just like asked me about my day and like just seems to give somewhat of a shit about me, that makes it to where I'm that much more inclined to come back and pay attention to what people are saying.
Right. That's because it also comes down to, you know, like the earnest willingness, mm-hmm. like how badly does, because there's definitely times where I've gone to spaces where I'm just like, ooh, I'm not really jiving with what y'all are talking about here. So yeah. I'm going to go somewhere else, you know, but there's definitely, you know, because I did relapse. And so what I, instead of like, I was in a recovery space where I was just like, I don't like the way you guys are doing it here. This is not working for me. And instead of finding somewhere that I did fit in or felt more like this made sense, I was just like, you know what? I'm actually not like you guys at all. And, you know, like then like relapsed pretty epically and it was, you know, really good. You know, definitely did not lead to any sort of downfall or falling out with anyone that I'm like super close with. You know, it was just, sunshine, rainbows and, you know, beautiful skies. But no, coming back, like that was, you know, getting sober again is something that I was like nervous about. 'Cause I'm just like, I'm going to have to go to these spaces where I just don't agree with these people, where I don't have anything in common with them. Like, it's not going to be a good time. But, you know, I was also isolated. So I was just like with myself. So not around people I had anything in common with. And yeah. I wasn't having a good time. So I went anyway. And yeah, like not every space I went to was the space for me, but I went and found other spaces. And then like, I remember like one time I saw someone wearing a Nirvana t-shirt and I'm like, I can be here. this is where I am with that girl. That is my friend now. Nice. Like, she's got Nirvana and a flannel. We're friends. And so I would go like, so, because there would be times where it's like, ooh, I don't necessarily, you know these people. I don't necessarily, you know, understand the message that's being shared here, but I have something in common with this person. And like, that is more than I had yesterday. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to show up just for that.
Yeah. Well, I think like, for me, circling back to like the first part of the question, I relapsed. I think I personally relapse is a part of the cycle of addiction, because when I was relapsing, I was still in an addicted headspace. I still had an active addiction mindset on everything. And so even though I was like going to meetings and going to groups and trying different things, and I was trying to do all the right things, like I go to detox, I try to go get a sponsor, try to call people, I still wasn't like living. I was just basically checking boxes off, because to me, I was like, if I just check the box, if I just physically show up somewhere, if I just ask someone to be my sponsor, if I call them and just say, hi, I'm fine, and hang up, I'm checking the boxes and eventually something will click. But I felt like entitled, and I felt like I'm not giving up my life, and I'm not giving up the way I do things just because this program is telling me to do it, whether it be like the medical the facility itself or meetings, like the rooms. And so I think like when you're stuck in the same mind frame and the same mindset, and you're just like in this cycle of relapsing and going back out and drinking, because you're like, I'm going to keep doing it my way, I'm going to try everything my way, you don't know what you're talking about, I don't relate to anyone here. To me, that's like it. That's just being stuck in that cycle. And I like, you know, I always say like, I went periods of being sober, but I wasn't in recovery during those periods. I just was like physically not drinking or using. But I was like dead inside.
Yeah.
Like to me, that's not recovery, you know? So that's just like kind of my take on it.
Yeah, no, I can't disagree I can't agree more. Like it's one of those things, like if I'm, yeah, I'm not getting high right now, but I'm doing it because I'm like, just that's all I'm latched onto, is I'm just not going to get high. It's like that's not a fun way to live. That's not something that can last long term. And in my experience, or something that I've seen for anybody else, at a certain point, if the only thing you're doing is just, I can't get high right now, and there's nothing to like fill that void, eventually it's going to break you down.
Yeah, because I started getting angry towards people. I'm like, oh, I can't drink. And like, why are you guys drinking around me? And why are you guys acting like that? And why do you have to do this? And why do you have to do that? Like, I'm not doing it. And I just started like building and getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And eventually I ended up drinking. Because it's like, well, I'm not drinking because I'm supposed to be happy now. But I'm not happy yet.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, you know, going like this, like a baby. I picture myself like a baby in a crib. Wah, wah, wah. I want it now. Make me happy now. But I don't want to do any of the work. I don't want to call. I don't want to do steps. I don't want to go to... I want it now. Just be happy now. So.
Yeah, no. I mean, the biggest thing I've seen with that, it's like, and I don't know if anyone can relate to this, because I sure as hell can. It's like going to high school and sleeping through every class, where it's like I'm physically there, but I'm not doing anything to learn anything. Like that's from everything you described, and like me having the same experience, like that's what it was like being new in the rooms, where I'm not willing to do any of the stuff. Like I'm like, why don't I have all these things that you guys keep talking about? It's like, well, I'm here. I'm not getting high right now, but I'm not doing any of the things to like gain these new things that you keep telling me about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's how, that to me is being trapped in an active addiction mindset.
Yeah.
Me. You want to go to the next question?
Yeah. So speaking of being new, do you think newcomers today have it easier, harder, or just different than when you came in, and why?
Different is the way that I would put it. I don't think there's really an easier, harder thing.
Just an easier, softer way.
It's just not. I mean, like my experience was, when I got sober, it was like late 2010. The only like rehabs I knew about were basically Ridgeview and Peachford, neither of which sounded appealing. I don't want to go to a hospital. And I got stuck in this other rehab that had a different take for a lot of kids that were basically between like 15 to like 23. And like, they had fun. And like, I had a blast. I also went to jail while there for doing things that you shouldn't. Apparently bonfires in public places, not a great idea. Climbing historic monuments, also frowned upon. Oops-a-daisy. But I'm trying to think. Like, there wasn't as many options as there are today, but like at the end of the day, once again, my experience, everybody has their own roads they travel. Like the end result is like, hey, I'm going to go to AA and practice the principles and the recovery that I've seen. Once again, you go to NA, have other things you do in life, like whatever it is, like, but treatment's not the final answer. What I would say might be harder today is it used to be, I'd see a lot of people that would come into the rooms. I barely see anybody just come into the rooms. They're in a sober living. They're in a treatment. And the thing that I think's become more problematic as a whole is the treatment industry is, oh, hey, like we're here to help you. And we're going to basically tell you everything's okay for about anywhere from 30 days to 3 months. We're going to give you a little bit of help with things. But at the end of the day, it's, I think newcomers now have this mentality of, oh, treatment's going to help me. Oh, when I get in trouble, I can go to treatment. Oh, when it's too cold outside and I don't feel like being on the streets, I can go into a sober living. As long as I have insurance or I can find somebody that will like give me help, I have an out. And the amount of like repeated cycle of I'm just going through these motions again and again and again, at least from my perspective, have gotten worse. Whether they have or not, I don't know, but I've definitely become more aware of it in the last 6-7 years than it used to be. Cause it used to be, but it, like at the same time I see, I mean, not more newcomers. I remember when HA got going in Atlanta, we would give out 10 white chips every Sunday on the low side. Like there's a bunch of nights where I remember we gave out 20. It was hard to keep chips. Wow. We also only had like, I don't know, 10 people that had over 2 years sober. Where I can say the amazing thing was that was like, you'd see these people that are desperate for change. And at the time, treatment wasn't as much of a thing. Sober livings weren't the plague they are nowadays of you go 20 feet in any direction, there's a sober living. It'll charge you $1,000 to share a bedroom, whatever. That's a whole, I could rant about that shit all day. But like, it was, hey, if you want to be here and this is what you want to do, like, here's your in. Versus nowadays, it's like you can find so many other options that I don't see as healthy ways to grow. It's just, hey, this is a little vacation I can have from getting high for a while.
When I went to treatment, there were people who would say things like that. They'd be like, yeah, I had nowhere else to go, or this is like my, 20th time doing this. So I remember I told the treatment center I went to because they asked me for some feedback at the end. I said that my feedback would be that there should be a little bit more of like an educational component because it for me, I thought by going into detox, I would be cured. Like I really thought like once I physically feel better, like I'm going to be better. And I think that's how, you know, in my experience with the people I interacted with, you know, it's like I do this thing, I'm here, and then I'm going to be better. Like life is just going to be better, right? And it's, and I know for like me personally, I had a hard time coping with the idea of like, oh my God, I have to work this for the rest of my life. Like this is like a lifelong thing for me. I'm not going to just be able to come in here and then come out and be okay. Like, oh, that's like, you know, I don't know. I think that it could be a little bit more of like an educational component to it. But again, it's like, you know, are people really going to want to hear it? Or are they just like looking for places to go? And I think with like any industry, people start to look at the dollar signs. And it's like instead of just, and I understand having like safe, clean places for people to go and stay, of course. But I also think like having, you know, like my sober living, there were still like, there's still testing. We had like apps on our phone. We had a whiteboard. We checked in. There were a lot of rules. And so I think that's really important if you're going to be in an actual program, if you're trying to like help people rebuild their lives and not just give them a roof over their head.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, a lot of that too goes down to the willingness of the individual. Cause you know, back before there were places to go and it really was just meetings, you know, however you could find them, you know, it's like, okay, well, do you actually want to get better? So then you'll go to a meeting and do what you need to do. You know, but then like when you add like the homeless equation on top of it, it's like, okay, well, you could get better, but like that doesn't, you know, you could stop drinking or stop using, but that's not going to solve the fact you don't have a roof over your head. And so then sober livings would give them a place to go. And so it's kind of like, you know, like you could see it being a spiral of one thing causing another thing causing another thing. But if the person wants to recover, right, they likely will, because they'll seek out, you know, the solution that they need. But I think too, it's also important to be surrounded by like-minded people. And I definitely, like, there's definitely a connotation with recovery spaces where it's a lot of people who are in treatment. You know, there's like those connotations that it's not going to be a good space. It's not going to, you know, there's not going to be a lot of solution. It's going to be, you know, dicey or whatnot. But it's still like, if someone's seeking recovery, you know, they deserve the opportunity to find it. And if they did, if they don't want recovery, that's their choice. And, you know, maybe the in and out types are in and out of knowing if they want recovery or not.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I was kind of thinking about with it too, is as far as like dealing with basically that whole thing when it comes to the treatment aspect is, it's easy for me to say all this because it's like, oh, I've been sober X amount of years. I've like seen all these things, had all these experiences. For somebody coming into treatment for the first, second, maybe third time, it's like what they're introduced to is, hey, I'm going to go to this treatment center where for the most part, it's you're going to have 5 to 20 people just talking about their problems and complaining because like ownership's not really a thing when you're first day sober. That's not anyone's fault. That's just the reality for the most part. Sure as hell was for mine. Where you get this idea of like, oh, well, this is what recovery is. And then like you might go to meetings, but once again, like I made friends with Fuckboy Joe in treatment. It's really easy for me to think like, oh, this is recovery because I'm comfortable with him. And versus like, the dude that's like talking about God in the meeting. It's really easy to like kind of just naturally gravitate towards this is where I'm comfortable. Cause like, for me, it was like, I like being in the trap. The idea of coming into the meetings and like finding the guy that had the best program made me feel very unwell. Finding the guy that was covered in tattoos and looked like he was ready to fight somebody, I was like, oh, I'm gravitating towards you. And like, it's cause it's just like, where am I going to find my comfort? Even if I really want to be sober, if I'm uncomfortable, I'm not used to being in uncomfortable situations, it's really tricky. Cause once again, like the entire time I'm getting high, it's like, I want to be comfortable. I want to like feel this certain way. And like, even though I'm putting myself in all these really bad situations, it's like all chasing that comfort. And the moment I'm just fucking raw dog in life and just like not having anything to make me feel better physically, it's like, where can I find that comfort? And the answer is always going to be putting in the least amount of effort and doing the bare minimum, finding people that are where I'm going to feel better than. So it's really tricky. And I think like that's been a constant for the most part for anybody getting sober. But when it comes to like the treatment's going to fix me because I don't know anything else, like I, like you said, I really wish they had a little bit more on the whole, like, hey, we love repeat clients because like money talks. but like, we really want to see you actually get better. Like it's one of those things, like not all these places are created equally. Like some of them are awful. They look really nice. The apartments are great. They make you comfortable because they want you to keep showing up. But finding an actual quality place is going to be something where you're actually going to see the difference between this is what recovery in treatment looks like, because recovery and treatment are not the same thing. The program and treatment are not the same thing. Finding a treatment center where they're going to try to bring that to you and open your eyes to it is going to be the biggest difference of what's going to make it the easiest path to help somebody get sober. Just kind of bring it back to your original question.
I got like really sidetracked just thinking about you going up to like some big burly tattooed guy who looks like he's going to like beat somebody up. For like anyone who's not watching the stream right now, he's wearing a sweater and glasses, no visible tattoos. Looks like we talked about this before the show, you look like you have a massive in-home library. Like you look like Clark Kent over here.
We're wearing matching sweaters but in different colors.
No, I appreciate that. No, I mean, like, it's and I think that just kind of speaks to the program of like you come in and you get sober and like here's the person that you are, and like over time you change in ways that surprise you. As far as tattoos, I have more than most. They're just all underneath my clothing. But as far as like I am most comfortable in chaos. Like still to this day, like I had a conversation with my girlfriend actually about this like earlier this week, where I'm like, hey, you're very nice and treat me so well. If you can dial that back a little bit, because like, I don't know how to deal.
I've had to talk to partners about that before. Yeah. I'm like, can you be a little meaner, please?
Yeah, it's like, if you spit in my face every once in a while, I'll
that's mostly nice.
No, because then they all eventually did become like actually mean, where I was like, you committed too far. You
committed to the bit. But no, I mean, like, I'm not going to really get into detail about before I got sober, but like, I was very comfortable being in very unsafe situations with the idea of severe danger being there daily. And then throughout my recovery, it's like, I worked in EMS in like Fulton County for about 5 years and like did the 911 and like responded to situations where they're supposed to be safe when you get there. It's not. The police don't do their job a quarter of the time I would show up. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, like they may or may not have a knife. I'm actively fighting somebody. Like I'm very comfortable in these situations. And what the program gave me is the ability to start feeling comfort outside of that. Because it's like, I love the chaos, but like, that's never really brought anything great to my life.
Mm-hmm. You said you don't want to talk much about like before you got sober.
I can't. So, I just, big stories with it is really what I meant by it.
Yeah. Well, so that leads to our next question.
That's
lead in. addiction war stories. You know, you hear a lot of people, we talked about this earlier this week. You'll be like, you know, for me, when I was in college, I split my chin. I was really drunk. Mm-hmm. My friend put me on her shoulders and I fell over and I hit the concrete, bashed my chin open. That's the story. Mm-hmm. But then there's this version. Oh my gosh, I was drinking so much. I had like a half gallon of beep, 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 beep. I don't want to hurt anybody. And I just was, you know, I smoked a bunch of blunts and then she was waiting. It's like, so much detail. So like the addiction war stories, are they powerful tools for awareness or is it glamorizing the struggle of active addiction?
When you say that, do you mean like sharing in a meeting or telling their story or like a one-on-one conversation? Because I would say it's two different answers in my opinion.
Let's do a one-on-one conversation. Amongst friends.
So amongst friends or like, for instance, like taking somebody through and like doing a fifth step. That's where I would see like with friends, I love shooting the shit and like telling fun stories here and there. It's a blast. With friends, it's not, there's no solution for it. It's just like, hey, I'm just having fun here. With sponsees and like taking them through a fifth step and being like, hey, here's the kind of things I used to do. Here are the situations I've been in. Because I'm literally asking this person, like, hey, I want you to, like, tell me all of these things about yourself that, for the most part, are uncomfortable or, like, things that I'm embarrassed about or ashamed of or, like, scared that I'm going to go to prison if somebody else hears about it. Like, that's a lot to weigh on somebody. So being able to, like, bring some of these things up prior to them doing that, I see is a very helpful tool. When it comes to sharing these things in meetings, if it's entertaining, run it. That's not solution. But like, if like, I'm very simple, like I want to laugh or get something helpful out of this. But if I'm bored, I'm just going to be pissed the whole time. There's nothing worse than a boring story where they just kind of talk about like nothing. And it's funny because it's like the worst life story I ever heard was somebody that said they had 45 years sober. Talked about literally nothing with the program the whole time. And then the closest they got was I had multiple affairs with men at Howe Place and I don't regret it.
Back to that part.
Yeah, no, that's as close as we got. Is that necessary to talk about right now? No, but it was in my head and I'm still resentful about it. Wasted an hour of my life. But no, when it comes to like somebody giving their experiences and stories, like if you're going into like, I guess it depends on like, why am I telling this? If I'm telling it because I want somebody to like me, oh, there's this girl in the meeting and I want her to know that like, I'm this kind of guy, like shut the fuck up. But when it's like, hey, like I'm trying to be helpful because I can tell that like, let's say somebody else shared about some experience they just had, or they're trying to get sober and they want to like have them relate a little bit. Great. And then when it comes to telling your story aspect, like I'm pretty simple of like, hey, be rigorously honest in whatever that is, because that's what's going to help the newcomer. However, if you're talking about getting high and you just get bogged down in the details the whole time, this isn't helpful at all. With one exception, a buddy of mine told a story and it was the most entertaining thing I've ever heard. He basically ran around South America trying to outrun his drug addiction. Didn't work, but goddamn was it entertaining. I love that. It's still one of my favorites.
But I think too, like there's some, if you can tell it well, because you can tell when somebody is romanticizing that last high where it's just kind of like, okay.
I said it's like they're foaming at the mouth.
Yeah. But then there's like also, you know, if you can take a time where like when you were living it was one of the lowest points of your life, but through recovery, you've learned how to tell the story and it's entertaining. That's powerful in itself, because then that can help the next person who's coming in with that story of like, oh, this guilt and shame. Like, okay, there's this song that when I was in active addiction, it's called Trailer Trash by Carol's Daughter. And when I was in active addiction, it was my sad girl cigarette, like, oh my God, can't believe my life is like this song. Cause it was like I've seen friends turn to junkies and like all this, like we have no money and, you know, I'm trailer trash and all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, oh, boo hoo, boo hoo. And then when I got sober, I was like, this is a bop. Like, like, hell yeah. Like, I'm trailer trash. Like, yeah, I was a junkie. Like it changed. It went from like my boohoo song to like a badge of honor, you know? And it was only because of recovery that was able to happen. Cause now when I listen to that song, I'm like, this isn't even like, how was I crying to this? Like, this is not, like, this is just a fun, silly haha. But you have to, you know, get to a place of acceptance with those things. And so I think that's when like those war stories can be impactful, is like, you know, these people have come to a place of acceptance of some of the darkest parts of themselves, some of the darkest times in their life, and now it's funny. Not really, like, to us.
Yeah,
to us. Don't ever make the mistake of sharing a funny war story with a normie. They will
right.
Like, I accidentally,
where oopsie daisies happen.
So this week I did it this week by accident to my father, because he was showing me how to, so I work for him, and so he was showing me how to, I needed to lay some stencil mask before I painted something, and there were strips of masking that I just needed to lay, and he was like, well, if you lay the initial piece like this, he said, you'll save yourself a line and you won't have to do it. Mm. And I said, well, I don't know about you, but if there's a line in front of me, I'm gonna do it.
He's like, what does that mean?
No, so yeah, he just continued talking. I was like, you're not gonna say anything about that? And he was like, you know what, daughter, I was just gonna gloss over that one, like, you didn't say it. And then he kept calling it a line. I'm like, all right, dad, we're doing so many lines right now. And he just, like, the look on his face, I was like, dad, I'm not actually gonna do a line, like, this is not. But in my head I'm like, you keep saying it, this is so funny, but it was not to him.
Yeah, I think it's also like where you're at in your recovery, because, you know, like for me, when I would think about the fun times of me drinking, like I'm at the strip club and this guy gives me a stack of cash and I'm just literally throwing piles of money on the stage and people are like, oh, you're so, and I'm like, oh, and I'm drinking, and then I fall asleep on the stage and my friends tell me about it. I'm like, that sounds like so fun compared to my boring life now. I'm not throwing ones at strippers anymore. I'm not, you know, laughing the next day with my friends. Like, dang. But like, you know, that's what I would think when I just like wasn't ready. So like my war stories, essentially, I'd be like, oh man, that sounds fun. But like, fast forward to now where I'm at my recovery, I'm like, wow, that's like really dangerous that I was like falling asleep at a public place at a strip club. And, you know, it's also like probably she could have stepped on my foot. I could have tripped her or something, you know, and it's like, ugh, not remembering what I did. Like, that was fun for me. Like, I used to like think that was exciting. Like, yes, tell me what I did when I was blackout. Yay. And now I'm just like, ugh. So I think it's just about like, where are you at and like perspective and like, what is your intention in sharing that? Because yeah, like when I talk to my sponsees and I share from my experience, it's like, hey, this is where I was. Like, I can relate to you. I've been like, here, look at me on the other side. And they're, you know, or when I tell my story in the rooms, people are like, wow, can't believe it. Like, so inspiring. Versus if I'm like, you know, just not in the right headspace. And I'm thinking like, kind of want to go back to that life. Kind of want to go back to tripping and falling and splitting my chin and chugging fifths. I don't, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, no. And I mean, it just kind of brings it back to like what we've been talking about. It's like that if I don't have something to replace this like hole in me in this way in my life, eventually I'm going to go back to these things that like I knew it made me feel some kind of joy and comfort, at least in the beginning. It's funny you just brought up the strip club because all I can think about is my buddy referred to them as naked panhandlers in a meeting on Saturday.
Naked panhandlers?
Wait, so like the other day?
Yeah, no, this is, yeah. it was great. I have not laughed that hard in a long time. He's like, listen, like I could go to the club, but like all I'm doing is giving money to naked panhandlers. Like, what are we doing right now? And I was like, that is a better way to paint a picture than I've ever heard it. And it is fucking hysterical.
Yeah, when you paint the picture, it is like really dark. Like, yeah,
it's like you're strung out and you just want money and you're willing to shove your tits in my face. Thanks.
Yeah.
It sounds a lot more fun until you get sober and you're like, this is a lot more sad. Like a good example I can give is like, so I went went to my buddy's bachelor party somewhere 5-6 years ago, something like that. And we go to the Pony and
I've been there.
Is that where you fell asleep on the stage?
That I fell asleep there, but it was not that same night.
Yeah. But we walk in and like I run into one of my exes that like I started dating in the program, who was working there. And it was one of those things where like I ended up chatting with her for a little bit. And it's one of those things where it's like I could see like when you kind of go back to this life, like this is where you go. And like it didn't seem like happy or joyous or like all the things that I get out of this program. Which is why, like, when I have these feelings of, like, oh, it was so much more fun when I was doing, like, X, Y, Z. It was exciting. It was thrilling. Like, there's also the downside that comes with all this. Because, like, at the end of the day, like, if you're just having a great time all the time, you ain't going to stick around. Like, it's like there had to be, like, some kind of bottom to be like, hey, like, this kind of sucks. I'm willing to do something different for you to be willing to actually do it.
Mm-hmm. Now that made me think, like when I
when you went to the Pony,
Pink Pony Club.
Oh my god! For those who don't know, Connor's version of Pink Pony Club is the straightest white man thing you'll ever hear in your life, and it's actually incredible.
Yeah.
But no, when I stopped doing drugs and was just drinking, and I was like trying to do anything I could to not have to need any kind of recovery space because I can do it myself. Like at that point in my life, actually, there's been multiple points in my life for this, and it's strange, but people were like, hey Sarah, you should be a stripper. And I'm like no guys, I'm like, don't you want me to stay off of drugs? Like, and like I was like I can't do that, that's not something I'm gonna do. But like I just knew, I'm like, that lifestyle, like whether or not it's gonna be around or not, like I'm gonna be in an environment where I can only do that if I'm doing drugs. And that was just like the one thing that I knew, because I did consider it a lot. Mm-hmm. And that was like the conclusion that I drew. Cause at first when I was doing drugs, I was like, I am not cute enough to do that right now. Like I can't even eat. And then, when I stopped doing drugs, I was like, well, if I'm going to stay, that was like literally my sobriety plan was I'm just not going to be a stripper. And then
it's a good start.
Yeah. Step one, do not become a stripper.
Yeah.
I mean, in like no shade to the sober strippers out there.
More power to you. Like, a shout out to the sober strippers.
Yeah, no, I've met a couple where it's like it was one of those things like they got sober and they kept doing it because they, and like I know I've met a couple different doctors that actually, it's like that whole like thing where you see it in a movie or a show where they're like, oh, I'm working through school so I can become a doctor. I've actually seen that happen for somebody in the program.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's one of those things like you can go anywhere, do anything and stay sober as long as your intentions are right.
Right.
So it's one of those things like if somebody chooses to do that, hey, it's your life. It's just one of those things when I look at like, is this somewhere I want to go and like hang out? Like work, one thing. Like, do I recommend it for most people?
You want to go there to work?
Yeah. I mean,
you want to go there to work?
No.
I'm just kidding.
I mean, like, if the money's right,
you
want
to go there to do your job. You're like, you're
Pony
working
by genuine.
Like, you're working remote and you're at the strip club. That's what I pictured you doing.
Yeah.
You're like, hold on. It's
the
like you blur the background.
Yeah.
You blur the background.
Yeah. I got unlimited wings. They get really mad about the webcam.
I used to have a friend, he was like, I go to the strip club every week, but he's like, it's because the steak bites are really good.
Oh my god. All right, so moving on. Jesus,
so sorry to whoever's gonna edit this, Kim, sorry.
Is anonymity still necessary in today's world, or is being public part of helping the next person?
Public in what way?
Like recovering out loud.
No, but I, like, so like on a, like, for instance, like we're on a podcast, like on a platform or so here's the way that I kind of look at it is I am not an accurate representation of AA. I don't think there's any one person that is, because it's like, let's say, let's say me and somebody else work a completely different version of the way we live our lives. The program's still the same, but like the way they interact with the world and the way I interact with the world are different. If somebody sees the way that I am, they think this is what the program is and they don't like it and it makes it unappealing to them, that can be a deterrent. So the way I said, like, that's just kind of like one-off experiences, but like the whole thing with anonymity is like, it's not really as much of like, hey, if you want to go talk about it outside of the rooms, you do you. I'm not going to walk out of like a meeting and be like, oh, hey, like I saw Sarah there and like tell other people about it.
Right.
That's where the anonymity is an important thing for me. Cause it's like, as much as I'm very like open to talking about it and like saying like, yeah, like I'm a person in recovery, I know a lot of people that aren't. I know a lot of people that for work reasons, it's like, even though it shouldn't be a bad thing, it would not be a good thing for them in a work environment. So if somebody starts doing shit like that is where I got a big issue with it. But at the same time, I've only heard of it happening a small amount of times. And it was like, with one exception that I know of, was accidents of like that you run into them in a public place and then they would like say where they know you from. And then all of a sudden you see like that mortified look on their face and you're like, oh shit. But I mean, like, it's impossible to like not be like to have true anonymity per person. Cause like the internet, it's a thing. The amount of like public people that are like actively in recovery is a big thing. Do I think it's a great thing that it's that public? Two sides to the coin on that one. But like, here's a good example. Like somebody's like, let's say very famous and they're like, oh, like everything's about recovery and I work a program and I do this and like I'm Mr. AA, and then they relapse.
Yep.
And then the only thing that people see is AA doesn't work. The program doesn't work. It failed them. They did everything and they're not going it, when it's just that one person's experience. Now, like as far as is anonymity, like with the exception of like blurting out, hey, so-and-so's in the program, an issue? No, but like, cause like the other side of it is like, think of all the people that got sober because they found out that so-and-so was sober.
Right.
Like I see a lot more sober culture things nowadays than I did 10, 15 plus years ago, to where it's not people that are just in the program. It's just like they saw basically a generation of fuck ups from like the 2006 through like 2015. And they're like, yo, we can do better. And like they're like actively doing that. So like, who knows? I guess is like my final answer with it. As long as you're not outing other people, don't do that.
Yeah. Cause I think, you know, like the anonymity, it is, you know, personal. So it's like, if you want to tell people like the program you use to recover, awesome, but you do not have the right to tell other people what other people use to recover. But no, I loved what you said about like someone who's big and famous being public about their recovery path. And then what if they relapse? Because that 100% is why I try not to, like, on public spaces, try not to say like which program or programs I might be doing at the time. Cause like, you know, like, yeah, I'm sober today, but you know, all we have is today, right?
Yeah.
You know, don't know what the future has to hold and don't want to, you know, give, like, unintentionally give a bad name to something that could potentially save somebody else's life. So that's on the one hand. But then on the other hand, right? Because, like, you see six, seven.
You said it, not me. Get it out. Is it out of our system? 6-7, 6-7, 6-7.
But on the other hand, that is a way people learn about it. Like, I personally know somebody who found out about a 12-step meeting because they saw a 12-step meeting on TV. They weren't calling it any, like, I think they called it, like, Friends of something. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a name we would know. But they were like, wait, like, that might help me. And so they looked it up. And what they found instead was a hotline for one of the 12-step programs. Mm-hmm. And they got her plugged into getting help. And then she stayed sober. So it's like, so that could be good. But my favorite is like watching a TV show when that whenever there's a meeting in a TV show the main character, they just have a fucking monologue and it's like they're using this meeting to drive the plot. And it pisses me off every time because I just imagine if I'm sitting in a meeting and some fucking newcomer is just going on for 10 minutes about their dead mom, their dead kid, their trauma. And I'm like, yo, you need more than this group can offer you. Yep. Therapy.
Go ahead.
Like, and the other part of that, when you bring in like the entertainment aspect of like movies and TV shows, like AA meetings in general are represented so poorly.
That's what I was going to say.
It's always like, it's always the classic, like we're in a circle. Yep. Everyone's very somber. Like, let me be clear. Most people in meetings, like if you're in a group of friends in high school and there's that one guy that's like kind of questionable on his decision-making skills, that's basically everyone I know. We are not this quiet, somber, oh no, like the sky's about to fall sad. And there are some meetings like that. They're a bummer. Don't go to them. But I mean, the other...
or go to them if you like that.
But like where it's like typically in most of the meetings I go to, they're like, it's fun. It's loud. Me and my friends cut up. We're honestly kind of a problem. But like... the other thing I need to remember too is like, at least in this area, we are so spoiled with recovery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are, last I checked, like 1,800 meetings in the Metro Atlanta area weekly, which is insane. Versus like, for instance, my old sponsor moved back to Arkansas about 10 years ago, and he's got one meeting that's 2 hours away once a week. And there's all these places to where the recovery that we get to experience and the fellowship we get to experience is not the norm most places. So it's like when I see all these things in like the media, the sad part is like a lot of people go to like one meeting because that's the only option they got. And that's what it's like where there's three or four people. They're kind of bitter because whatever might be going on in their life versus what we get to experience around here, which is awesome of like, there's a lot of people that like have time, keep coming to meetings, have a good life. We have like the fact that like most meetings I go to have at least 40 people in them throughout the week is crazy compared to so many people around the world that like they might have two or three people in a meeting that they can go to once a week.
I was going to say on TV because of the way it's like they make it look on television. Prior to getting sober, my ex, I would go to meetings with him. He would go to NA. And I was just like, I wasn't really paying attention. I always noticed, I was like, there's a lot of coffee. There's a lot of coffee happening. But on TV, it's always the fold-up chairs in a circle in like an auditorium or something, or I don't know. And I'm like, oh my gosh, when I started going into the rooms, I'm like, every single meeting is a speaker meeting because of the monologue. You got like one. I was like, every. And then the first one I went to a meeting, it happened to be a speaker meeting. And I was like, oh.
You're like, it's true.
It's true. It's just an endless cycle of hearing people talk. Just one. And it's all men. And they're old. And they're Caucasian.
I can't remember if like the first time I saw a meeting on TV was Breaking Bad or Shameless, but I distinctly remember that there was going up to a podium to talk.
There's and also
I
was a podium, like, yep.
Nope. That is nightmarish. Yeah. That is hellish. And so when I walked into my first meeting and I saw a podium, I was like, fuck.
Yeah. Don't notice me. Don't look at me. Yeah. Do not notice that I exist right now.
Yeah. But it wasn't like the round robin style meeting. It was, you know, they just have that for the speakers and it was just a regular. Well, it wasn't a regular meeting because that was a candlelight meeting. And I talked all about that when I shared my story on the show. But
81.
No, but it was the lights suddenly turning off was super unnerving because like nobody said anything about it. I'm like, are we gonna die? Like,
yeah.
But okay. So let's get into the fun rapid fires. Ended on a positive, fun, haha. What is your go-to happy dance song?
Pink I mean, Pony Club. You saw, yeah, I was going to say Pink Pony Club, where I mean, we went and did karaoke. There's nothing better than meeting a bunch of like your girlfriend's coworkers in a karaoke bar. And then you got to sing things that you don't want to do. But yeah, I danced to Pink Pony Club in my car a lot. And then that's really my go-to happy. My go-to unhappy is probably Xanax Bars by Little White.
Little White
Oxycontin.
Just in the editing bay, just laughing hysterically at that answer.
Yeah, if you got high between 08 to 2010, that song is burned into your brain and you know all the words.
If you got high between 08 and 2010, make some noise. That's what you just said. That's the vibe you gave me. Okay, would you rather go door-to-door caroling or mall photo shoot on Santa's lap?
Oh, mall photo shoot. Santa, I mean, like, don't get me wrong. Is it questionable that he's a pedo? Definitely. But he has a big smile on his face. You ever see people smiling when they carol show up at your door? That's where you just, like, hear a little click, and then all of a sudden you're like, all right, everybody's nervous.
Kim said that she used to go caroling as a child, and that after they listen, people would expect them to give them treats.
Get off of my lawn.
No. Okay. The people, they're like, I listen to you sing. Where are my treats for listening to you children sing? Give me a treat.
They deserve it. Oh, they deserve money, too.
They're children. All right.
Act like they're
if the Grinch were working the steps, what step would he get stuck on?
I mean, technically, when you look at the movie, he kind of did make an amends.
He did make an amends to the town.
I mean, like, he brought all the stuff back. That was better than most of the junkies that I know. They kept it.
or sold it.
Yeah. Hey, you know what?
So they maybe 12.
Yeah. I mean, now that I think about
carrying the message.
I've never really thought about it, but the Grinch kind of, like, learned to work a program throughout throughout the movie.
It's not how the Grinch stole Christmas. Yeah.
It's how he rebuilt it. His heart grew 3 times the size, and it wasn't through excessive drug use and human growth hormones.
He admitted he was powerless over hoo hash.
He admitted he was powerful. Yeah.
He admitted his power. He admitted he was powerless over hoo hash.
Over hoo hash.
That's funny.
What was really in that roast beast?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He made amends with a roast beast. Okay. This is a very, very wholesome one. Snowball fight or sledding?
Have you participated in either? We're in the South.
I broke my arm sledding, and I got a black eye in a snowball fight because ice.
So neither.
I mean, like, I'll try anything twice.
Only twice?
Yeah, I used to love the snow. Whoop. There we go.
I mean, same.
No comment.
Sarah is not okay.
My children tune in. Right. My children tune into this. No comment.
What is a hobby you discovered in sobriety?
Oof. Problematic. Just lots of them. As far as hobbies go, let's see. I got into motorcycles. I got into cars. I played a lot of disc golf. Still do.
You look like you would play disc golf.
I haven't heard somebody play disc golf since I moved from Portland.
Basic white dude. He must throw plastic at baskets in the woods. I'm just saying, think of it this way. You're going through a walk through the woods, and you just get to throw stuff at other stuff. That's a guy's favorite thing. I'm just throwing stuff at metal.
I love disc golf.
Makes a little ching.
Yeah. I used to play when I lived in Oregon. Nice. I haven't heard of anyone playing it since I moved from Oregon.
There's a lot of it around here. Yeah, they're also usually getting high. But sometimes we're not. Motorcycles was probably the most dangerous one. I got hit in a hit and run about 9 or 6 years ago. Got lucky on that one.
Nine or six.
I'm dyslexic. Let's just go with that.
Okay.
Okay. What's the worst gift you've ever received?
Ugh. There's so many things I shouldn't say on this right now.
Say it.
No.
Out loud.
No.
Every gift I've received was amazing.
Yeah, no, I mean, emotional damage from my mom. Trauma. It's okay. She's dead now. She won't hear this.
Sounds like something my dad would say.
Yeah. Dark humor.
You want to hear a fun story about that? I'll make this real quick. So, she was a flight attendant for Delta for 40 plus years. She died on a Friday. Monday morning, I get a call from Delta saying, he's like, hey, is this Connor? I was like, yeah. He's like, hey, this is so-and-so with Delta. First and foremost, we want to give you our condolences from Delta for the passing of your mother. I paused for 2 seconds to go, my mom died? I think this dude almost died right there hearing that. I paused for like 5 seconds where I just heard him go, And then I was like, I'm sorry. I'm joking. I know she's dead. I was there. I saw it. And then he just kind of fumbled through his words for the next couple minutes.
Poor guy.
That's so good.
If you're going to be the guy that calls, I feel like I couldn't have been the worst response. I think it was the funniest.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my Lord.
You need to take him a roast beast.
Nah.
For Christmas this year.
I gave him a story. I was plot development in his life.
That's true. Oh, I like that. Write that down. Plot development in his life. Make it a t-shirt. Christian, t-shirt, plot development.
If Santa got arrested, what would it be for? And not breaking and entering.
Pedophile.
Jesus Christ.
Okay.
I'm just, okay, so this dude delivers packages to children around the world. Unwanted.
They are wanted gifts.
They ask, the kids literally write letters to say, that's like the whole thing.
You know people also write letters to? People in prison. Pedophiles.
I don't know if pedophiles are getting a lot of... Let's end on a high.
Not on a high. We are sober.
Let's end on a most high note.
Oh, my Lord.
What's a small act of kindness that made your day recently? A small act of kindness that made your day recently. A small act of kindness that made your day recently.
Into the big microphone, please.
I know. I'm thinking.
Into the big mic. Put your mouth closer to the big mic.
Oh, my Lord.
Let's see. My girlfriend's very sweet. I like her a lot. Oh, you know, a small act of kindness that made my day was Thanksgiving. My sister put most of her hand in my girlfriend's mouth at the dinner table and then immediately followed it up with asking my 86-year-old grandfather, hey, would you let a man peg you for money?
How is that a small act of kindness?
It brought so much joy to my life that how could that be anything other than a great act of kindness? Do you want to know his answer?
Yes.
The world will never know.
Somebody paid for my coffee. That was mine.
Well, that sounds lovely.
Okay. Well, Connor, any hot takes that you want to leave the audience with?
I have burning desires now.
Yeah.
Your recovery doesn't need to look like anybody else's. Do not compare your insides to other people's outsides that you meet in a meeting. And if you want to get sober and stay sober, just do the work whether you want to or not. That's the important thing is just like, hey, like I just don't want to, I got tired of seeing my friends die years ago. Figure out what it is you need to do and do it. And if you're unwilling, like that's a bum.
I love that. Thank you so much. I love that. And now on that bum, check out the Most High Media app in the description box below on YouTube, where you will find this episode and previous episodes, as well as documentaries and more recovery-based original content. Find the Most High Media. Oh my God, I'm sorry, I'm sick, you guys. Find Most High Media on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Make sure to follow, like, subscribe, and do all the things. This show is made possible from the Georgia Opioid Crisis Abatement Trust. Thank you. And thank you to our donors and sponsors. And thank you to Sarah. And thank you to Connor. And thank you to HP. This has been the Most High Show. Amen.